Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my guest co-host, via the magic of telephony, Dr. Rick Hess.
Hello there.
Hey, hey, hey. So, Rick, I understand that you are currently at a secret, undisclosed location. Can you tell us more?
Sure. I'm actually down in Florida, at a county which name I cannot reveal, doing deep field research, and I think I've found a couple of important findings. One is that children are indeed our future. If we teach them well, I think they can lead the way. And in fact, much like a Malamar, they're able to show us all of the beauty they have inside. I'm going to try to get back to you guys soon with more deep findings in the field. But for now, let's leave it at that.
Yeah, you know, Rick, just keep your feet on the ground, but keep reaching for the stars, baby.
Oh, that's beautiful.
All right. Well, if you are a new listener to the Education Gadfly Show, let me tell you how it works. First of all, this podcast is inspired by the original Education Gadfly, which is our weekly take on education news and views. You can read it at www.edexcellence.net. Now, we're going to start today with an interview with the Education Gadfly himself, Checker Finn. Then Rick and I will play a game of Pardon the Gadfly, where we show off our rhetorical skills and tackle the news of the week. And finally, we'll get a shot of education news of the weird. All this in 15 minutes. Okay, well, I sat down with my boss and Fordham president, Checker Finn, earlier today. Let's take a listen. Checker, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure.
So the big news last week was that Oprah Winfrey, on her show, had a big feature on education. Everybody was in a tizzy. And she, in fact, featured some excellent schools, including three charter schools. And yet you are still mad about something. What is that?
She might even have featured four charter schools, because I believe the one in the prison is technically also a charter school. In fact, I think every school she featured as a success, as a good thing, as a plus, was and is a charter school. And yet in the entire two-day program, nobody ever mentioned the phrase charter school. Oprah didn't mention it. The people who run those schools didn't mention it. Nobody mentioned it. Why are we keeping the fact that they're charters a secret?
So are you accusing Oprah of a conspiracy?
I'm very pleased that Oprah has discovered school reform, and I think this is a good thing for school reform. I also think that she brings a large, important audience to the topic at hand, and I hope that she gets a lot of people fired up. But so two cheers for Oprah. But I am withholding the third cheer because neither she nor her guests let on that these great schools wouldn't be great schools if they weren't charter schools.
You know, I mean, picking up on this story, you know, earlier this week, American Institutes of Research released a report showing that the Edison schools have a moderate degree of evidence of their effectiveness. Pretty big news, you would think. And there's been zero news articles written about that study. And yet, if you Google Edison right now, you'll find all kinds of bad news about Edison and the charter schools they run. What's going on here in the media's coverage of charters?
The same thing that always goes on in the media's coverage of education. Other than the National Teacher of the Year, no good education news ever gets reported, only bad news. So you would at least expect that the media would have reported that AIR found that aside from Edison, no other for-profit education management organization had convincing evidence of its effectiveness. You'd think they might have reported that because that they would regard as bad news.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Checker, for joining us. I hope you'll come back once again.
Just try me.
So, Rick, what do you think? Checker's pretty mad at Oprah, huh?
Well, there's one guy who's got a burr in his saddle.
That's right.
I think part of the problem is that sometimes Checker forgets that it's a question of teaching the children well and letting them lead the way. He keeps getting caught up in notions about structural reform and wanting to talk about things like charter schooling and accountability and making sure teachers know what they're teaching. But I think this all dates back to his difficult experiences back in the 1970s when he was working on that soybean farm out in Sedona. And I think what happened was Checker just got frustrated with the commune leaders who consistently brushed aside his ideas for reforming the ways that they were going about the marketing and the distribution of soybeans?
You know, that could be it, Rick, but there's two other explanations. One is that he goes around and people call him Checker, which would make anybody angry. And second is that, frankly, I think he wanted Oprah to have him on the show. So,
you know, that might even be a more sensible analysis. I'm going to have to defer you on that one, big guy.
All right, well, enough chit-chat. It is time to play Pardon the Gadfly. Now, you know, Rick, my guest co-host last week, our own Liam Julian, actually debated the topics, so the pressure is high. Are you ready?
I'm going to do what I can, and then I'm going to climb inside of Julian's shirt and beat the crud out of him.
Okay, very good. Okay, so topic number one is solving the dropout crisis. Now, some voices are starting to say that the reason so many high schoolers are dropping out is that we no longer offer solid vocational education programs. Not everyone wants to go to college, and these folks argue pushing everyone in that direction is a bad idea. So are they right?
Well, I think the right problem right out of the box is that people tend to frame this issue wrong. They're framing it as a substantive problem, when I find that if we frame these as rhetorical challenges, they're much easier to address. So if we think...
Rick, that doesn't mean anything, does it?
So if we think about vocational education in terms of training kids to be electricians and auto mechanics, we got a problem. But if we shrink the size of the school, talk about cake baking and auto repair as applied opportunities to learn calculus and engineering, and then talk a lot about relationships and relatedness, I think the problem goes away. We can do voc ed and prepare kids for college.
Okay, Rick, it definitely sounds like you're trying to raise money from the Gates Foundation right now. but seriously, you know, I don't agree with this voc ed crowd, to tell you the truth. I mean, we've got plenty of survey data that shows that that dropouts report that they dropped out because they were bored, because they weren't challenged, because, you know, the adults in their schools didn't think they were very capable of much. And, you know, let's face it, in today's economy, there are not many of these skills that you can go into right out of high school that are going to give you a whole lot of opportunity, you know, to live the good life and to participate fully. So, you know, what's wrong with saying, look, we want to make sure that everybody, when they turn 18, has all of the background they need to go to higher ed if they want to. And if they don't, that's their choice. But we haven't made that choice for them by forcing them into voc ed when they're 14 or 15 or 16.
Well, the problem here is really, I mean, it all depends on what we mean by voc ed. And one of the difficulties is that there's actually no evidence that voc ed is any more boring than the classes that we're stuffing kids into in the course of their normal high school careers. And in fact, you know, I think many of us have actually seen voc ed programs which actually were academic and inspiring and challenging, much more so than the run-of-the-mill classes that were labeled academic classes. You know, like so much else, what this comes back to is the question of the rigor and quality of the classes rather than the labels that were thrown around them.
Rick, I bet you spent a lot of time in shop class in high school, didn't you?
Oh, man. You know, it was great. I loved having that lathe. I mean, time. I'm getting bored.
Oh, time is up. Okay, Rick, what's topic number two?
Well, Mike, I think you're going to like this one. Unions and charter schools. There was a big wing-ding in Washington last week to discuss whether charter schools should be unionized and whether unions should be allowed to launch larger schools. Is this the beginning of the end for charters as we know them?
First of all, did you say larger schools?
I thought I said charter schools.
Okay. Well, Rick, you know, first of all, let's take on this issue of whether or not that was a good one, Rick. Of whether or not charter schools should be unionized. This is clearly a bad idea. Okay, I mean, the whole idea of charter schools is that they are supposed to have a lot of flexibility and freedom in return for accountability for results. And the flexibility and freedom is not just from the bureaucracy that the district provides, but it's also from the bureaucracy of the teachers' union and of that collective bargaining agreement. You know, so this would definitely be moving us backwards. And the good news is, according to the people coming out of this conference, is that the unions haven't made much progress unionizing charter schools, partly because it's so much work to really do it school by school. And in my opinion, that's a very good thing.
Well, I mean, partly that presumes that one of the defense mechanisms is that charters are going to stay relatively small. If you imagine a whole bunch of charter chains getting up to 200, 300 schools each, the unions are going to start to think about this real differently. I don't think it's a problem. Obviously, I'm not in favor of collective bargaining as we know it in education. And I'm not sure that it's a good, I think it's probably preferable for schools to remain unorganized by the unions. Fact is, though, it's a free country. If charter employees want to go ahead and join a union or form unions of their own, the real challenge is going to be on the folks who operate and run charter schools to negotiate savvily and to make sure that they don't let themselves get dragged into the morass, which school districts have been careless about.
All right. So, but then you've got some providers out there. You've got the Green Dots of the world, right? Steve Barr's group, that are actually deciding to be unionized from day one. You know, I mean, so what is this? Is this just pandering to the teachers' unions, to the base of the Democratic Party?
Fact is, right? I mean, Saturn plants are unionized. Saturn plants are unionized, and they've been relatively effective. It is reasonable, and it is true that unions can be productive partners in a well-run organization. It's just not possible under the kinds of contracts that we've negotiated in school districts. I mean, what it's really on is it's on the folks who are operating and running charter schools to be smart and savvy about their negotiating. That's what Steve Barr is doing, baby.
All right. That is a very manly buzz this week, isn't it?
I like it.
That is impressive. Okay, Rick. Our final topic, third topic of three. The American Institutes of Research came out with a review of the evidence on education service providers, the for-profit companies that manage public schools. AIR has done this before for some of the whole school reform designs as well. What it found was that only Edison Schools has any evidence of effectiveness, and it has moderate evidence, which is not bad by their scale. So what are the implications, Rick? Should school boards and charter authorizers refuse to work with anyone but Edison?
I mean, I don't know of any evidence that Dell or Microsoft are effective companies. The last thing I actually know of that was born, fully formed, and successful was, I think it was Athena who jumped out of Zeus's skull when it cracked open. The whole point of entrepreneurial activity in education is that it's going to be a hit-or-miss proposition. If we start saying that we're only going to allow folks to come into the space with new models, new operations, who can prove they're effective under some simple-minded metrics, it is going to be a long, slow 21st century.
Well, okay, Rick, and I agree with much of that, and I said as much the other day at a panel when this report was released, but look, somebody raised the issue. Some of these companies are 10 years old. They've been around for a while now, and it appears that they have not taken seriously the task of collecting data and collecting evidence that they're effective. I mean, isn't that just shirking their responsibility?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly if you're going to bid for a contract to work in the public sector, you've got an obligation to try to demonstrate that you're effective.
So
the real issue here is not whether boards should be permitted to, and there's certainly no call for the feds to get involved under any of the language of NCLB. But if you're a school board member and you've got somebody who's asking you for a contract and they've been around 10 years and can't show you any evidence that they do a good job, the same thing would happen if somebody wanted to mow your lawn and they've been doing it 10 years and couldn't show you that they knew what they were doing.
All right, so you are saying, so what you're saying is school board members, you shouldn't sign a contract with anybody but Edison.
If you've been in business 10 years and you can't find anybody to write a letter of recommendation for you in any line of work, it raises some obvious questions.
So why is this happening?
If you've been in business 6 months or 18 months, a whole different set of obligations apply.
So why is this happening? Why aren't the Mosaicas of the world, putting real resources into good evaluations?
That's a hell of a good question. I think we have to ask them.
All right. Well, I guess maybe we'll have them on the show. I mean, if you read Steve Wilson's book about the education management organizations, he makes it clear that they've been under some serious financial pressure from day one from venture capitalists. And maybe the venture capital community doesn't see the value in spending money and time and resources on these big evaluations. But maybe after this report, they will. Okay. Very nice, Rick. Well, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. It's time for everyone's favorite now, Education News of the Weird, with our very special and very weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
Outside Washington, D.C., in Maryland's Prince George's County, is Fairhaven School. There, teachers teach, but they aren't teachers. And leaders lead, but they don't call themselves administrators. That's because Fairhaven is less a school and more a community, and there are no rules. Sure, students must be at the school for at least 5 hours between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., but they can spend that time playing video games or solitaire or chatting on the cell phone or shooting hoops or doing absolutely nothing.
This sounds an awful lot like Liam's work day.
Well, it's a lot like daycare for 17-year-olds, really. My question is, Rick, if you went to school with no grades and no curriculum, how would you spend your time?
I think I'd spend my time pretty much the same way any other kid I've ever known would, which is playing video games, shooting hoops, trying to sneak some booze, and trying to hook up. Now, these are all good things. I approve of them, and I don't think that's a problem. The kids want to do these things. It just strikes me that the whole reason we have schools in the first place is that left to their own devices in the backyard, we don't, kids aren't necessarily going to do the things that are going to prepare them to be useful and constructive citizens.
Rick, this is an all-boys school.
Does that mean you can't hook up? Let's not be narrow minded here, baby.
I'm just kidding.
I approve of these kids having fun. I'm not opposed to us, trying to see what we can't learn from this and make sure that we're actually trying to see education as something that's interesting, provocative, and fun. But my goodness, if all we're going to do is have kids shoot hoop and play video games, they could sit home, call them dropouts, and we could save their parents $6,500 a year.
Well put. Rick Hess, always looking out for the financial needs of our families. Good, 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 good. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you, Rick and Liam, and thank you for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net and send us your thoughts at letters@edexcellence.net. Until next week, on the phone, that is...
Howdy do.
Who are you, Rick?
I'm Rick Hess, baby.
That's right. And I am Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.